G'day friends, I'm James and welcome to the Australian Opinion on Formula One here at the Lakeside Drive F1 podcast. In this very special episode, I chat with Juan Pablo Montoya. I'm joined by Juan Pablo Montoya. Juan, so great to have you on the podcast. Welcome back to Australia. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's been a while, actually.
Has it been a while?
Yeah. I think it was 2006, last time I came to Australia.
Goodness.
Yes, it's too far. It's beautiful, but it's way too far.
That's what we say about Europe.
And anywhere else.
And anywhere else. Although you can get a direct flight to South America from Sydney. So
can you?
Yeah.
I don't know. I live in Europe, so.
Well, there you go. Well, you can also almost get a direct flight to Europe too.
Yeah, 20-something hours, yeah.
Yeah. As you know, it does take big adjusting. And the good news is the time zones change on Sunday again. Did you know that?
I heard. Yeah. We were looking at that. So I guess for Sunday's going to be hard because do we get an extra hour of sleep?
You do, yes.
Oh, that's good because the race is like 9 in the morning and we're looking at it and it's like it's still kind of dark at 8.
Yeah. Well, the reason that you're here, let's talk about Sebastian because he's sitting over here. The reason that you're here the first time since 2006 is because the junior series of Formula 3 and Formula 2 are finally racing at Albert Park. I saw a brilliant photo actually of you on the grid the other day holding an umbrella for Sebastian. How does it feel now being on that side, being a dad of a driver?
That's good. It's, I mean, time changes and everything, but it's good. It's fun to be around him and follow his steps now and be able to give him a hand. That I think is quite important. And yeah, it's pretty simple.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll come back to him in a little bit. What I'd love to do is I found an Australian connection in your early career, which was F3000, and you were partnered alongside Craig Lowndes,
a
very much loved, yeah, very much loved Australian. Tell us about that year. It was the first year in F3000, wasn't it?
I think for both of us was the first year. And yeah, he was with, I think he was like Tom Walkinshaw's, like, you know, bright start of his future star. And funny enough, we raced for Helmut Marko that year.
Really?
Yeah, we lived in Austria and the team was Marco, RSM Marco. Yeah, it was Helmut, you know, Red Bull Helmut Marko.
Wow. That would have been incredible. What was he like back then? Was he as
same?
Has it changed at all?
he seems more relaxed now. Helmut, like, he seems a lot more relaxed. We laugh about things that we went through and stuff. We're even, like, it's funny because he wanted to talk to Sebastian in Bahrain. Mm. And I said, you need to go alone. Like, we walk with him with the paddock and said, you go and talk to him. It's your problem. And when he was done, he called us over. I'm like, oh, you know, just say hi. But, you know, I want him to understand that his relationship with him, it's his problem, not mine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he's got an issue, he can come to me. But it's important for them to have their own relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we were laughing about all the things that happened back in the day. And it's amazing how sharp he is. He remembers everything. I still do as well, but he remembers everything. It's incredible.
What were your junior years like in F3000?
3000 were really good before that. It was, you know, I had good years and bad years, you know. In Vauxhall, the second part of the season was good. But it was very different because all the championships were based by country.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And then it got bigger when you went to 3000 like an F2 today. You know, they changed the name, but it's basically the same championship. Before the F2, everything was like the British F3 and the German F3 and the Italian and the French and the Spanish and the Japanese, blah, blah, blah. And then everybody got together for the Masters and Macau.
Yeah. Was there a moment back then when you sort of thought, okay, I'm actually pretty good at this, I'm pretty quick, and you put Formula One in your mind as where you were going?
Actually, 97, the year I raced with Craig, we had a really good year, but I thought that was my last year racing.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened? We
had no more money. We were out of money. We had, you know, we were in a tough situation, and I was lucky enough to get a test with Williams, and I did really well.
So, I mean, nothing has changed in that respect to today in terms of money. Yes, some drivers come through on credibility, but especially for F2, it's not and F3, it's not a cheap championship to take part on. What was it about the Williams test that made you different from the others? What was the success? Was it just pure pace, or was it other
just
things
pure
as well?
Pace? It's funny because they made a written test, and I was probably the worst one at it because I didn't ask anything about the car because, you know, I thought everything was a major secret. So I never asked about tire pressures. I never asked about anything. And then in the test, they ask a lot of those things, and I didn't know anything. But, you know, I got in the car and I was quicker than anybody else.
So. Yeah, I'm sure that's all that Frank really cared about.
You know, nowadays there's a lot of preparation. It's very different nowadays, you know. And nowadays, I'll give you an example. Like Seth for here, he's done a ton of laps in the simulator. He had a ton of preparation with the team, a ton of preparation with Red Bull, a ton of meetings, things. You know, they learn a lot. They understand a lot, like, the knowledge, like the tire model, how it works, how they develop everything, how you need to drive the car, how you need to prepare the laps, it's like the amount of things and the amount of documents they gotta do nowadays. I would have been a terrible driver nowadays. like I can, if you tell me you have a problem, I can find you the solution, and I'm really good at it. I can drive a car really fast, and I'm really good technically to thinking outside the box and figuring out the problem.
Do you think also because there's such a shift now in social media and access to younger drivers that's better than any ever period in time, does that make a big difference too? Because there's more distractions as well as more work to do that makes it harder to be a driver now than compared to the late 90s, early 2000s?
It's different. You know, now everybody... You know, everybody with the social media, everybody's happy. Everybody, you know, is friends with everybody. In my time, you just got to beat them. You didn't care whether they liked you or not.
Yeah.
So I fit it right in.
Well, look, there's plenty out there in terms of everyone says that you're fast. And I think I read unpredictable and ruthless and all of these words. Were you, did that sort of tie into what you wanted to do, or you didn't really care?
Honestly... back in the day, the more the reputation you were crazy and stupid, the easier it was to pass people and race people because people knew you were committed.
It's almost a golden era of racing when you ended up in Formula One.
Yeah, lucky enough.
It's an incredible period of time. And I know that you've said in the past that you could have had a longer career in Formula One, but you chose not to.
Yeah.
What do you reflect on your... really bloody successful years, really has to be said, in Formula One. You had plenty of victories. You had some amazing overtakes. I watched just before we came here today your overtake on Michael Schumacher where you put it up on the inside and he wasn't expecting it. How does it feel?
Honestly, I don't even think about it. Nowadays, you look back at it and I think it's really cool, but, you know, like the way my mind works is... Like, I'll give an example. Like, my warriors right now are him, ELMS that I'm racing with him, actually. We're racing together with Hendrik Hedman.
Wow.
With a bronze. Yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun through the year. And I look after a couple of kids, one in cars and one in karting. And, you know, that's how my mind is spent. I never race for the trophies. You don't race for the trophies. You just, like, at least I didn't. And in his way, I think it's a little bit like that. It's because you just want to beat everybody and you want to do better and you need to prepare better. And, you know, you want to make sure you don't leave anything on the table. You know what I mean? Whether not every week you're going to be the quickest guy. Not every week you're going to be the best guy. You just need to understand what you're missing. What do you need to do and what you're missing?
So is it more about, for Seb, then smoothing out the highs and lows of success and maybe failure to just be learning all of the time?
No, you know what I mean? Of course you want success and you need to do your job, but it's a process. And you know, when he's been happy and comfortable in the car, he can win races. He can get the job done, and, you know, his racecraft is really good and everything. there's always details to make better, but you know, I think he understands where what he needs to work on, and right now he's in a really good place. Like it's like his maturity is incredible, and it's really good to see.
If we could go back to your debut in Formula One, because it was here in Australia, do you remember much of that day in 2001?
Yeah. Well, I remember about the race that it felt like I was qualifying. Like I was, you know, I came from, I did couple, remember I was a test driver yes. with Williams, and I went a couple of years to America. You know, we came here and raced in the Gold Coast and everything.
Yep.
And then when I came in from F1, you know, I in my mind was, okay, full push and qualifying. And then the race, you manage the tires, you manage the race a little bit. And it wasn't like that. It was, you know, nowadays you need to manage a lot of the tires and everything. Back in the day, it's like just push. You know, I started the race and I'm like, you know, pushing, you know, within reason. And everybody's driving away from me. I'm going, what the hell? Then you start pushing more and you start pushing more and you start pushing more. And you feel like you're freaking qualifying. Lap after lap after lap after lap, you're qualifying. And it's like, what the hell? Like, they're never letting go. You know what I mean? And I finally get to a point that is like, just qualifying lap after qualifying lap after qualifying lap. And then the pace started getting quite good. And then the engine blew up.
Yes, which it had a habit of doing, unfortunately, for you.
Yeah, the reliability back in the day wasn't as good as nowadays. You know, the engines were designed for 400 Ks. So they were not engines that were built for, I don't know, I don't know how many Ks they do nowadays, 2,000-3,000 Ks per engine. And now they have power units and all that stuff, you know what I mean? The electronics and everything is a different animal, you know what I mean? I think you understand where they come from with a lot of the safety things. But I think, in my opinion, some of the things are a bit of an overkill, but it's what it is.
Yeah. Do you think then, looking back at what was an interesting start, as you said, because you're pushing and pushing and pushing for qualifying lap, do you think that because of your time in the US, that it was different for someone like Fernando Alonso or Kimi Raikkonen, who had come up through the junior series in a mentality way of just pushing all the time? Or do you think for them, also it's rookies learning? Yeah.
It's same. You know, I mean, I had a lot more experience than them because we all three started the same year. So it wasn't terrible. It was good. You know, I mean, we did what we needed to do. And, you know, through the year, we were quite competitive and it was good.
There's a lot of conversation around older drivers, and for a long time, older drivers meant late 20s, which was ridiculous.
No, if you think about it, that, you know, if you look at it, the way I looked at it, I was going to turn 32, and I had like 3 more years left in F1.
Yeah.
So for me to stay in F1 with some, you know, a team I didn't want to be, or somewhere where it was mid-pack, made no sense.
Yeah.
So I could extend my career in America, and I did. I'm still racing.
Yeah, you are, which is incredible. And it is a joy to watch, honestly. What is it then, or what do you think then about Fernando Alonso? Because, I mean, Aston Martin seemed like a pretty interesting move. You know, he has a habit of making pretty bad decisions when it comes to jumping across to teams. And so, I mean, he's coming to Australia, 2 podiums in a row, 2/3 in a row.
That's good. It's really good. You know what I mean? I think Aston did a mega job putting the new car together, and, you know, you gotta give it to them. You know what I mean? It's gotta be hard. Like, it's a hard pill to swallow for a team like Mercedes and everybody else. You know, everybody else on a Mercedes engine is looking at them and going, what the hell? You know, same time, you look at, I think Williams made a big step. It's interesting because when you talk to the guys at Williams, I said, oh, we don't feel like we're making a, you know, like we're not moving anywhere. And I think they made a major step that it was really good to see. So it's an interesting year, you know, like for you guys, you know, you have Oscar this year with, you know, with McLaren, that is an interesting choice. And, you know, it should be fun. You know, he's done a good job. He's brought good speed. And I think through the year, he should get a lot better. Because remember, he was sitting for a year.
So what is it then about Formula One now that you think people are really getting around? Is it only just Netflix's Drive to Survive, or is
no,
it more?
I think the Netflix thing was a big thing because it showed everybody the inner working of Formula One. Because one of the things with Formula One is, as people don't really have any access to it, it was like a lot of people didn't understand it, especially younger people didn't. It's like, what's the big deal of cars going fast? But when you see all the drama behind it and everything that happens behind it, it's amazing. You know, I'm you look at Gunther, you know, Steiner, he's a good friend of mine, and it's great. And I'll be honest with you, I watched a couple of episodes of the whole thing, but like my daughter watches, like she sits down every time it comes out, she sits down and watches every freaking episode and she loves it. And she loves coming to the races. She understands how everything works, and it's really cool.
NASCAR and IndyCar are equally as brilliant in a lot of ways.
Yeah, in their own way.
What would you say to someone who was maybe in Australia, maybe a little bit fed up with V8 Supercars, which is our local series, and watching Formula 1?
I think the V8 is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, but it is changing a lot.
Yeah, but the changes are not a bad change, is it? Like for what you... The problem is people, I don't get this. I don't get what's the drama with the changes when they come up with new cars and new things. It's, you need to move on with the times, you know? It's like they've done better jobs. The cars are better and you know what I mean? It's what it is. And the problem is, I think a lot of the bad press comes personally from the older guys and the older drivers that don't want the change. You know, they're so used to driving a certain type of car and they're being good at that certain type of car. Then when things change and the car doesn't drive the way they expected, they're going to go, oh, this isn't, I don't get why they change it. This is terrible.
Yes, that is.
And yeah, that's what's happening.
That is very true. Yes.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it, but I would assume
I've been
around long enough to understand how this works.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's absolutely, absolutely fair enough. One of the questions I was going to ask is about NASCAR and how exciting it is. Because in Australia, we don't get a lot of exposure to IndyCar or to NASCAR.
Yeah.
What is it about those series for you that interests you?
So NASCAR, it's like, imagine like the, you know, the V8s here, kind of the same thing. But in it's based on ovals, not on road courses. It's the same thing. And the ovals are so much fun. People, you know, when you ask somebody, it's a little bit like the F1 when people didn't understand it. I think if people could see how technical driving an oval is, how many different lines there is, how much technique is needed to be good at them, and how long the races are. And one of the hard things with the races being so long is as you go through the race, how the balance changes.
It's a lot of that. You know, I did turn left oval, but it feels like there's so much more to it. And it's interesting.
Yeah,
with the
and it's the same thing. You know, like if I watch a V8 race, you know, when you're watching Formula One, you probably don't find it that interesting. It's a cool race, but Merriman. But if you're in the middle of it and you understand and you know the players, like I think it's real. I think what the Netflix did as well, he created personas. Of everybody, of all the drivers and the personalities, and people started liking some drivers and hated on others. And, you know, whether I always said, whether they like you or hate you, it's fine as long as they do either one. You know, you need to worry that they don't pay attention.
Yeah, that's a good
and,
point.
And I think the V8 series, it's an amazing series here in Australia, and they do a mega job. You know what I mean? It's, I know, like, as you said, Craig was a, Lowndes was a big, you know, was a big star here with him, and Ambrose as well at its time. And, you know, I'd race against Marcus for a few years in NASCAR and everything. So, no, it's been fun.
Yeah. Well, look, you've got so many wonderful Australian connections. Looking forward then, what is your plan for this year and what are your hopes for Seb for F3?
Well, we do ELMS together and that's the only racing I'm doing. And our, you know, for Seb, our hope it's, you know, through the year to, you know, I mean, be more competitive, start trying, you know, get some, you know, hopefully some wins, podiums, and just keep scoring points. You know, this is a points game, the way these championships are won, and I think we got enough pace to have a shot at it. So, at the end of the day, it's in his hands, and we do as much as we can to prepare him as well as we can, and that's it.
Well, fingers crossed that it all goes well for you both and for Seb. and F3, maybe F2 next year. Who knows what happens? It can go year to year to year so quickly. Things can change.
Yeah, you know what I mean? We don't worry about it at the moment. Like, we focus on what we're doing right now, and probably July or something, you start looking at it and say, okay, what do we need to do next year?
Well, Juan, thank you very much. I really appreciate our very quick chat. All the best for this weekend, and looking forward to maybe seeing you back in Australia next year in maybe a different championship.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. Well, a massive thank you to Juan Pablo Montoya and to Sebastian Montoya for their time here in Melbourne ahead of the Grand Prix this weekend. If you enjoyed our chat, please consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a rating or review. We love doing this kind of content with the Australian point of view on Formula One here for you, the listener, all over the world, wherever you're listening. But that's it for this episode. We'll see you next time on Lakeside Drive.